You're listening to Spilling Ink.
Welcome to another episode of Spilling Ink, the talk show that takes you behind the book to meet the authors and professionals in the publishing industry. We're back again with some more authors to introduce you to, and of course, the awesome, wonderful Reverend Jason Lavelle.
Woohoo! I bless you, Katie. I bless you in this show.
I'm totally calling you that from now on. That's awesome.
It's Hawaiian shirt day here. I'm trying out my new Harley Davidson Hawaiian shirt. It's especially nice because not only does it say Harley, but look, it's got little skulls on it. Oh. And it was actually made in Hawaii, so I'm feeling good today. I'm wishing for warm weather.
Well, come on down here. It's been in the 70s.
Oh, that's perfect.
I know.
Ideal.
I hate to complain about that, but I do wish we had a winter. Just at least a little tiny winter.
Oh, careful what you wish for.
Yeah. All right, well, speaking of winter, we've actually got two Canadians as our authors this week. And I'm going to pick Miranda O as my first victim. Go ahead and tell us a little bit about your books.
Hi, guys. My name is Miranda O. I am the author of the Chin Up, Tits Out series. It's a three-part series. Two out of three of the books have been launched already. So if you're looking for an easy read, a fun read, a little bit of love, a little bit of crazy, a little bit of wine, and a little bit more crazy, then I highly, highly suggest it. It's a wild ride for sure. So I'm super happy to be here today and share my time with some really talented people. So yeah. Hey, everybody. Happy Saturday.
Awesome. I'm not drinking wine tonight. I'm drinking this Leinenkugel's Berry Weiss, which I've been told isn't actual beer. It's more like Kool-Aid, but that's all right. So if you've got wine and I've got this, we're doing okay.
Well, I got Starbucks water cup today, so no wine, not now.
Does that count?
Oh, does anyone have alcohol?
I can go get some vodka. Hold on just a minute. I like that. And on the theme of, you know, fun and romantic, a little bit flirty, let's talk to our other guest. Anna, go ahead and introduce yourself and your books.
Hi there. My name is Anna. I go by A.G. Kirkham. My books are called the Satan's Prize series. The first one out is called Guard. The second one out is going to be called War. It is about 2 to 3 months down the line coming out, and I'm really excited about that. It's about, big bad biker boys, and of course the women that they fall in love with. That comes from all kinds of different walks of life. The difference between my books and I guess the regular romance books is that I specifically write for a more adult type of female. So all of the heroines are over 35 to 40, and it's just to show that, you know, love comes in all forms and all different times, and you can never pinpoint when it's going to happen to you.
I love it, especially because I am a big biker boy. I am not a big bad biker boy. I mean, I can pretend for a picture, but yes. So that's fantastic. Now, when did you start writing these? What gave you the ideas for a biker boy series?
So actually, I never really planned on writing romance. I was actually writing self-help when I had first started. And then one day I just started, I was in a state of mind, and I was writing, and everything that I was evolving into these big bad biker guys. And I'm like, well, where is this going? And so, you know, when you're writing, you just kind of let it evolve. And in a span of time, this man came, and I'm like, okay, well, what do you do with him? So you kind of find that who would be the most least likely person that he would actually connect with, and how do you make that work? Because it's all about challenge. And that's what I did. I kind of found this heroine that is so completely opposite to him, but yet has this emotional connection that they kind of worked on. And then of course, you know, you want to make it, and I'm all about romance. I think romance comes in all forms of walks of life. And I think that, it should never be dead. And, if you can make it interesting, if you can make it unique, if you can make it real, and that's the one thing that I really feel is missing in a lot of these romance books, you kind of almost want to make it realistic. They have flaws. They're not perfect. And yet they're perfect for one another. So that's kind of where it came about. And then as I started writing about war, I started creating my own little city. And so, well, why do I have to have a guard just be the only one? So then war came to mind and who would suit him? And then the next book after that is Risk and Orion. And I'm like, okay, well, I've got this whole little city that I've created of these really unique men. And how do I introduce some really awesome women and have that work? And that's what I did. That's how it came about.
Now, are you a biker chick yourself or?
Well, I have a passion for it. I don't have the ability, but I know enough of these wonderful biker boys that I've got a lot of information that I've been able to dig out what they've been able to tell me. What they, you know, true biker boys don't tell you everything, but there are some things that they've let me, they've let me in on. So I've been very fortunate that I've had some really close friends that were able to give me, the right verbiage, the right tech, you know, the right wording, what they actually mean, although they don't tell you what they're actually doing. But you know, it is nice that they're open enough to actually have conversations with me, because you do want to make it realistic in the format that you're really trying to put forward, like, authenticity into what you're trying to, what you're trying to write as well.
For sure.
Well, I have appreciate that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That, hell yeah, they do. And I don't know much about, well, I do more now, but I don't know that much about firearms. And every once in a while, I'll have some kind of firearm pop up in a book of mine. And so I have my little network of guys that I always message. I'm like, hey, somebody needs to do this. Make sure I'm not totally bungling this up. Because if there's one group of people that will roast you, it's gun people. If you F up the weapons, you're going to get your ass reamed online. So, yes, having the right info is very important.
Terminology is really key if you want to make it authentic, right?
Yeah, no, for sure. Now, you have you said that you've got a lot of really interesting male characters. Are your books told from a male perspective, or are they told from the female perspective?
They're both. So the biggest challenge I've had is because I mean, romance has come a long way in the last 10 years. But what's really changed in the last little while is the fact that before it was always in the female's perspective, and then it kind of got switched to the male's perspective and females, but each book would actually have one. Well, now they want both. They want to know what she's thinking. They want to know what he's thinking. So I've actually had to revise. So Guard was actually written by Guard's perspective, my male. But War is actually both. So I've got a mix coming from both, so that you're in the emotional intent on each one as they're coupling, as they're becoming that one. So you kind of understand where she pulls back, where he pulls back, why, the hows, and I think it makes it a little more interesting. It also makes it a lot harder because when I had originally written more, it was always in his perspective, and I thought, wow, that's not relevant anymore. People just want to know each. And I think it makes a lot more sense. At the end of the book, you can kind of see a great big why for both.
I like how you guys throw in the miscommunication angle too.
Mm-hmm.
From both perspectives, you can see how one person said something and meant it and the other person heard it and misunderstood
completely different.
Why that created conflict.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and I have a question for both Anna and Miranda, and it's going to seem like a funny question, but there's a reason why. Now, when you're writing as different sexes, do you feel like the words flow more naturally from one or the other, or do you find yourself writing in either sex equally well? Like if you're writing from a male perspective, do you feel like it flows as naturally for you as if you're writing from a female perspective?
I think I write from my heart. So when I'm writing, it's what I feel he'll say or what I feel he'll want to bring across. So at some level, I have to go back and take a look afterwards because I write fully on emotion. That's my whole thing. When I start writing, it's like, blah, and it comes out that way. I have to stop at some point and say, okay, a second, does this actually make sense? Would he actually say it this way? And then that's when you start putting in the slang or putting in the tougher words or, you know, does it make sense that he'd come across quite that way? What's his stance? Then you start taking a look at what his actual vision would be of him when he's saying it. And then that's when I kind of do my editing and say, okay, this is how he would come across. But the wording itself at the beginning is all emotional. For females, I think it's a matter of, what do you want to hear? Like, what do you want to hear as a female? And what do you want to say? And women tend to be, for the most part, a little more open in how they speak. And I think they're also becoming a lot more confident in the way that they're speaking today. So it almost becomes, a lot of women cut the bullshit now. They kind of know what they want. And I'm also talking about mature women. So mature women do not have time for games. And they don't want games, especially if this is their second time around or their third time around, or they've been beaten down before. They don't want to play games. They've had that crap. They're done. They want to move forward. So they have very little wiggle room for acts of stupidity, which is usually what, when the game playing starts, one of them's going to back off, right? And I find that a lot of people have said to me that in the book, it's like, okay, as soon as the crap starts, one of them goes, nah, I'm not dealing with this because I've done this before. And I think that makes it realistic as well, setting those boundaries ahead of time.
Yeah, definitely. And speaking of women not taking shit and being more confident, we have Miranda O here, and I have a feeling that she probably has a few thoughts on that.
Yeah, for sure. Actually, to kind of speak on the mature woman aspect of things, I think it's, with my writing, I wrote solely on things that had happened in my life and lives of the women that have been around me, my girlfriends or my parent or my mom or my aunt or whatnot. I think situationally, we all kind of get to that piece in our life. At least we hope maybe it comes a little earlier than later on, that we get tired of it, right? We get tired of the shit that life throws at us. And that's kind of where the message came from of my books, the Chin Up, Tits Out title. It's not a provocative behavior. It's not flaunting it around, you know, speaking from a confidence standpoint of view. You know, if you go in and you simply put your chin up and you put your tits out, and those two physical movements make a big physical difference in your presence to people around you. Internally, you are making a difference, right? Because you feel like if you physically do that, you feel better and you hold yourself better. So the people around you will notice those little changes. They're small little actions that hold a massive impact. And no matter how much life gets you down, no matter how many times we go on the love circle or the this is my right decision and it turns out to be the wrong decision, I mean, isn't life all about making mistakes, right? Because if we don't make mistakes, we don't learn. And the shittier it gets, the deeper our rock bottom is. Think about the opposite, right? The deeper you go, the higher you have the opportunity to go, right? So if you kind of just live like a mediocre, balanced life, you don't really get the excitement because you don't really know the lows, right? So go to the lows, make the mistakes, do it with the chin up, tits out attitude, and eventually you're going to experience the opposite and you'll get the highs out of life that way. Like small little things, right? The small little joys in life, the second time around when you meet a big biker bad boy and it ended up working out this time, right? It's a weird connectivity. You ain't perfect. I'm not perfect. Hell, we are imperfectly perfect, but we work well together. And that's something that I think everybody should have the opportunity to celebrate with. If not once, then at least a couple of times in our lifetime, right?
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. Well, in that spirit. Wait, what'd you say, Katie?
I said I'm digging this whole theme of empowerment here.
Yeah, I feel like tomorrow I am going to approach life. Instead of sitting on the recliner, I'm going to go chin up, tits out. I'm just going to go walk around every department store I can. I'm going to be like, bring me the praise, big bad biker guy.
Free samples.
Yes. I'm going to go straight to Sam's Club.
Oh, hell yeah. Lunch at Sam's.
So, Miranda, you've briefly, when we introduced us, you said that your book was funny and weird and crazy and different. Can you tell us a little bit more about it? You know, what kind of...
Yeah, for sure. So the book follows a young woman. Her name is Hadley. You meet her in the first book. She's 18. She's right out of high school, buys a business, goes to college, does all these amazing things. She's all driven and has her life pretty much mapped out. And you're like, yeah, this chick has her shit together. And then she falls in love with a cute boy from Africa that has a really nice accent and a little beach boy vibes. And everything kind of goes out the window. But not in a sense of like, let's live happily ever after, but let's have the universe test this chick out and see how tough she really is. So the first book takes you through how she met this person, long distance relationship between Canada and South Africa, all the immigration issues and the corruption within their government, the remnants of the apartheid with racism. You know, you're sitting with the main character who, again, is this Caucasian 18-year-old from Manitoba, Canada, and she is the only white person in a plane and getting ridiculed, and it's 2007. And you're like, wow, really? That stuff really happens? And it does really happen, and it was super cool to write about and super cool to put in the book and relate to women from all around the world that have been on both sides of situations like that. And then the second book.
Where did that experience come from? Is that something, was it totally fiction or was it you?
It was me.
Really?
Well, kind of me, mostly me. But and it was like, it is true. I did fall in love with a man from South Africa, and my parents were like, "All right, cool, have fun. Don't be stupid." I'm like, oh. I'm gonna do it anyways, even though everybody, you know. So it's, and that was it. I kind of lived through the experience, and I was like, "Man, this would make a good book one day." And then the second book came to play where we meet Hadley, where she finally gets to bring home her partner. And you would think like, okay, like one book of immigration, racism, long distance relationship, young love, hot romance, this, that, bacon fat, sex, drugs, rock and roll, right?
And bacon, you said bacon, right? Did I hear that right?
Well, yeah, this, that, and bacon fat, you know, I don't know, just threw that in there.
I've never heard that phrase, but I love
that. Bacon fat?
No, I love it, and I really love bacon, so, okay,
so sorry. It's like I can't open a pack without eating the whole thing, so I can only open a pack if I'm cooking breakfast for somebody, because that's the only time I can justify eating an entire pack of bacon.
Well, they're single serving packs. That's what bacon packages are.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Sorry,
I don't know what those are for. I go to the bulk section with bacon.
Oh, the butcher section. I derailed
you there, Miranda. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. So second book, we meet Hadley. She's bringing home. So he's finally coming to Canada. And then I won't spoil it for you, but they get hit with a really traumatic diagnosis. And that diagnosis leads to drug addiction, illness, disease, mental illness, and some really, really crappy things that a lot of us deal with on a day-to-day basis that we don't either want to admit to ourselves because we're elbows deep in our own shit, or we are pointing the blame at somebody else, or you're completely oblivious to it happening around you, or you're living in a blissful naivety and maybe it hasn't happened, but it does happen. So you have to imagine the story takes you in a way where you're sitting down with your good friend and she's telling you a story. telling you about her life over the last 10 years. So she's telling you about doing this, this, and this. And then all of a sudden that inner voice, you know, the inner voice that we're all saying something on the inside of our voice right now, but we would never actually say it out loud because it's snarky, it's twisted, it's bitchy, it's sometimes inappropriate, sometimes not socially acceptable.
All I'm thinking about is bacon. I don't have anything snarky.
Yeah, okay, me too. I was like, I wish I should have gone shopping today for bacon. But so that inner voice comes through, and it really speaks to Hadley as a character and me as a human being, right? Like I'm just a 20-something-year-old chick in Manitoba. I'm nothing special. I've had some really interesting things happen to me. So I bought a box of wine and I sat down and I started telling my story. Because when I told people my story, they were like, oh, no way, that didn't happen to you. And I'm like, don't give me the pity eyes. I don't want the pity eyes. So I found humor and maybe a little alcoholism. No judgment. And boom, within 11 months, I had 2 out of 3 of my books. I've sold worldwide. Like it's crazy. Every continent I have readers on that I've actually spoken to that I don't know. They're not family. I mean, there are family, but there have been 4 continents and 4 people around that I have talked to that are not family. And we all relate to one another some way, shape, or form. We don't come from the same walk of life. We're different colors. We're different races. We're different religions. The only thing alike is that we bleed the same color. We have different problems. But guess what? Our feelings inside, whatever shitstorm we're dealing with, the feeling that we feel inside, that hole in our chest or that gape in our tummy or the throat that... You know how when it closes and you all get nervous or the weird anxiety sweats?
Yeah, anaphylaxis. Right? I get that sometimes. Yeah. When I eat peanuts, Benadryl, I know exactly Benadryl. What you mean.
EpiPen.
Well,
that's kind of where my story is and where it goes and what the chin up tits out is all about is no matter how much life gets you down, you pick yourself up, you dust yourself off, you put your chin up, you stick your tooth out, and you push on forward.
Well, I absolutely love it. So I need to. What do you do as a day job, or do you write full time?
Oh, I wish. No, I don't wish I could write full time. Writing if there's wine, different story. Writing when there's no wine, that's just, I don't know how people do it. Like, round of applause for everybody else, but I can't.
What's the saying? Write drunk, edit sober.
Yeah, that's like one of my favorite posts to do for Facebook takeover.
Yep.
And then I find because people, I always, when I sign books, I always encourage people to drink alcohol, whatever their poison is, when they read my books because they're funnier. They're more funny. Or whatever. They're better. So when people review them, they always comment on like, I crushed 2 beers and I banged this book back in like 2 hours. And I'm like, yes, who are you? Can we be friends? Right. So it's definitely something that I encourage.
So the day job though, sorry.
Day job. Sidetracked. Day job. What do? I am a corporate trainer for an insurance company.
That sounds like so much fun.
Yeah. So I pretty much talk in front of people. I'm an instructor. I train across Canada. I speak to them about how to become more efficient and how to utilize software within their organization. So that's cool. Just because I get to meet really wonderful people from all over the place. But yeah, that's what I do on a day-to-day basis.
Oh, all right, let me derail this one more time. Sorry. She said, you know, she speaks to people on a day-to-day basis. How do you approach presentations? What do you think of when you're about to get in front of an audience of people you may have never met before?
Oh, I'm all jacked up. I love public speaking. I like to connect with people. And so if I can connect one-on-one, it's magical. well, how do I connect to a room of 100 people or 1,000 people, or maybe bigger than that one day, cross our fingers and our toes and our eyes, is like, I always attempt to connect with my audience, and depending on why I'm speaking to them, I always try to step into their shoes and then allow them to step into my shoes. And we always try to find some humor in it. I think life is just heavy enough. Like our drive to work, our commute to work, there's always something chaotic, whether it's traffic or you miss a light or you're late or you spilled coffee or you hit your brake too hard or there's no gas or there's no windshield washer fluid. Like there's always something, right? And so if I get to lighten the load, talk about serious things, but lighten the load so it resonates with people and it connects with people, that's what I do. Because then people come up to me afterwards and I have the ability to connect one-on-one with them. And that's how I get refueled. I can fuel up everybody this way, and one-on-one is how I get pumped up.
Okay. All right. We had a guest a couple weeks ago who had said that they connect through personal stories. Some kind of story that they can talk to the audience about is a way that they connect with their audience and start their presentations.
Huge. Storytelling is absolutely huge. Last week, about 7 or 8 days ago now, I went to a conference called She Day, and it was 1,500 entrepreneurial women from Manitoba that had gotten together for a whole day's worth of speakers and stories and inspirational, helpful tips and a bunch of stuff. And that was our message, was telling stories. That's how you open up, and your words are what you leave people. And then if you can resonate with your words, with your story in some way, shape or form, that's how they're going to remember you. Right.
Heck yeah. And I think it's the best way to approach a group of people that you don't know, because we all do love hearing the stories. Mm-hmm. Yes. And I knew you were some kind of public speaker as soon as you started talking. I was like, oh yeah. Oh yeah. She knows her shit.
Yeah. I just really enjoy it. I would love to have like some formalcy to it, but I think that's just going to come in time.
You know, it's funny. I don't really like speaking in front of, cause I do weddings all the time, and I really, really enjoy it. However, I'm also a really anxious person. So for about a day beforehand, before I'm getting ready for these events, I'm always really anxious and going over the ceremony I've written for him 100 times and driving my wife absolutely batshit. I know it drives her crazy, but then when it comes to wedding time, I'm like, I really enjoy it, because I can be up there with a couple that's super happy experiencing this wonderful day and chatting with them. And I don't just read my ceremony. You know, I'll talk to them throughout, because they're nervous as hell, you know, and you want to help to diffuse that as much as you can. But I don't know. It's funny. I don't like speaking in front of my own family. I would prefer always to speak in front of strangers, I think. And I don't know if that's weird or I don't know. I feel like strangers aren't going to judge you, and your family might. I don't know. It's
a family's a lot easier on you. But then again, you will never live it down if you screw it up in front of family.
That's right. I don't want to talk about it again next week when I see you. No, this was a one-time thing. We're friends for an hour. Now we've moved on.
Bye. Yeah.
So you have a busy professional schedule. I work way more than I'd like to. Katie works all the time at home and with her kids and with her husband, trying to, you know, rein him in. I know.
My fourth child.
So where do we find time to do this author thing? You know, we were talking off the air a little bit ago, before we hit record, about some new policies that CreateSpace has got going on that we're going to get into here in just a minute. And I was telling you guys that I don't know anything about it, and I have so little time available to me now to write as it is, that I'm often way behind when it comes to keeping up on what's happening in the writing community, what new guidelines are coming out with Kindle Direct Publishing, what CreateSpace is doing, what Amazon has been doing to screw over authors this week, because it always seems like there's something new, right? You know, are they taking away reviews? Are they kicking out your box set? Are they just flat out refusing to acknowledge that you've published something? There always seems to be something crappy going on. But so how do you guys find the time in your already busy lives to commit to not only getting words down on paper, but all the other stuff that comes along with writing? Anna, what do you think? Do you have an opinion on any of this?
So I actually have a full-time job as well. So I work for a nonprofit agency, and I actually help newcomers that come into the country to assimilate into the Canadian workplace and then help them to find work. So that is a full-time job. And then I come home, and then you want to have time with your, like, my kids are adults and they're married and they're on their own. I have a grandchild. So you want to make time for your grandchild. You want to make time for your husband, who waits for the moment where you get to both come together and have that conversation. And then all of a sudden you have these wonderful ideas. And I don't know about you, but my ideas come at the weirdest times of morning, noon, or night. And I'm sitting there going, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? So I've started, and it works for me. I finally found something that actually works for me. I'll wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning and have this brilliant idea that I need to incorporate in something. So I've got a mini tape recorder because I can't type fast enough for my mind. So I grab this little mini tape recorder and I'll just talk into it and I'll talk into it and I'll talk into it until I'm like completely exhausted from it. And then I can go back to sleep, because unless I get it out, I'm not going to go back to bed. It's going to be going around and around in my head. So once I've done that, I can actually put it back down and then visit it again, either the next night or in the next couple of nights. And it's usually sometime after 9 o'clock or 9:30, because by the time you're home and you have that quality time that you want to spend, I have maybe a couple of hours before I'm going to try to get some rest as well. So that's usually when I write, or when I go away on vacation. So my vacation, when I actually take off and I fly to Panama, which I just did for 2 weeks, I spent every day on the beach writing. That's what I did for 2 full weeks. My husband knows, like, yes, we go down, we're going down together, but there's a time frame when I'm on the beach. Don't talk to me. You know, enjoy yourself, go do what you want to do, sit, tan, whatever. But for me, that time is meant for me. It's for me to reconnect with my own characters and myself, because that rejuvenates me. Writing is what makes me complete, fulfills me. So that is what I do when I go away. So I usually write a bulk of my time when there's no one around and I can just focus on myself. But that tape recorder, my saving grace. Because even if it's total crap, I know I've got it out on something and I can make the decision afterwards whether or not it belongs or it doesn't belong in that book. You know, but I can go back to it.
Well, and I think that's a fantastic way to do it. By the way, Katie, I'm going to start keeping track of the amount of times I say the word fantastic in each show, because I realized as I was editing the last show, it was like 20, and I'm like, well, there's a little bit of a problem here. But I think the tape recorder is a great idea, and I think that getting down our ideas when we have them is a problem that a lot of us have, because if it's in the middle of the night, we might not have the dedication that you do to, okay, I'm picking up my tape recorder, I'm writing it, I'm recording it now. And for me, if I actually say that idea out loud, sometimes my own words kind of drown out my head and it's like, it's gone. So I have just my little notes program on my iPhone that I always have it right there, and I can tap on it and I'll write even just half a sentence, and it's, you know, guy finds something in this other place. And that way I'm hoping it'll be able to jog my memory enough to get back to that train of thought. But otherwise, it's like these thoughts can come and go so fleetingly, so quickly, and how the hell do you grab a hold of them? It's like a dream. That dream is vivid. It's real. You can touch it and taste it and smell it, and you wake up and you're like, yes, this is going to be badass. As soon as I get done with work, I'm writing a whole story about this. But guess what? You're never going to remember that. It's gone. It's gone forever. Frustrating. That's frustrating. So how do you find time to work, Miranda?
Oh, I prioritize my life. It is horrible try being single and prioritizing dating and a job and your books and your promotion and this and that. And it's, I have a panda planner. I don't know if you've ever heard of that.
Whoa, but it is. Is it shaped like a panda?
No, it just, see, this is, I never have it without, it just has a little panda on the front of it.
It's cute.
But it's like, it is the best thing. It has a monthly planner, a weekly planner, and a daily planner inside of it. And with it, I can plan out every single task that I want to accomplish that week or that month with my books and all the tasks that I want to do with my job and all the tasks that maybe I want to do when at the gym, if I'm doing any fitness goals or something like that. And every single day you start with three things that you're grateful for and three things you're excited about. And then one positive affirmation. And at the end of the day, you write about three big wins and three things on how you can improve. And I've used it for like a month and my productivity level has shot through the roof and I've gotten like, I'm so much more organized that way. And when I have ideas written down, they're written down in a little section that's called my passion. I think it's like a passion project. That's what it is, a passion project. So that's what I write down on if any idea comes across. And then every week I review those and it's kind of cool.
Now, do you carry the panda planner with you everywhere you go, or is that stationary at home?
No, this is everywhere I go, and I have my purse, and I have my lunch kit, and I have my gym bag. I have the literal and the metaphorical baggage in my life.
Nice. Nice. That's a very organized personality right there. So, now, I have a question for you. So a friend of mine who's an author and a book editor loves to share all these cool planning programs she uses online for keeping track of projects and everything. But then just the other day, it could have been a panda planner, posted a picture of this new actual paper and pen planner that she had gotten. And so I was wondering, you know, all of our phones have the ability to create all of these schedules for us. You know, we can do all this right on the calendar on our phone. We can leave little notes for ourselves. We can schedule things out. How is that paper and pen planner better?
The act of physically writing it out helps my brain remember it. Even when I type, I type too fast, so it doesn't stick into my brain, but like the act of writing it out, I'm left-handed, that's why I'm doing this. The act of writing it out helps it stick in my brain. And if I write it, if I speak it out loud and I write it, for sure those three things that I'm excited about or that daily affirmation is sticking in my head because I've written it out. Today's my daily affirmation. The more productive I am, the more successful I will be, or whatever that daily affirmation is. It sounds so hokey pokey, but honestly, it's been the biggest difference. And I would probably say about a good dozen of people in my life have picked it up in the last month just because of they've seen the productivity level in me increase so drastically over the last 30 days. If I don't do this, I feel guilty, and I don't feel guilty for anybody else. I feel guilty for me because I deserve that.
Okay. Well, you know,
I think that nobody, we don't look at ourselves that way, right? Yeah. Like, Anna, you go and you're like, this is my vacation. This is my time because this is how I work. And you're my husband and I love you and we're here together, but this is for me, right? And I think that's so important that we need to incorporate daily me time. And that just happens to be part of it. And it happens to help me be successful in multiple avenues of my life.
You know, I'm really shocked because I have exactly the same idealistic methods that you do. I have my hand journal planner. That is my Bible. It is my Bible. And every night I write 10 things that I'm grateful for throughout my day. And every morning I wake up with what my accomplishments are supposed to be that day. What are my goals, my personal goals, my professional goals? What do I want to do? How am I best suited today? And, you know, and you have to be open. Part of me has got that, you know, yeah, you want to have those goals and those plans, but then you also have to have that flexibility to go with it. Because things are going to change, things are going to be different, you're going to be manipulated by something else that happens in your day. You always got to be that person that's going to be able to think on the fly and do something different, especially even when you're writing. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but like sometimes you have this great intention of writing a specific thing, and then don't you find that by the time you're done, you've changed it over 150 times?
Almost every time.
doesn't even end like the way I had it planned it for it to become. So I think that it's great to have those plans, but then be liberal enough and open enough to accept anything else that comes with it and to flow with it, because that's part of your creativity, right?
Well, we are not actually here in America allowed to be liberal anymore. It is actually against the law now. You can be put in an internment camp for it now. Yep. No, I'm sorry. So no, I actually really like that idea. I have never been big into paper planners, but I feel like, I don't know, I like the way you describe it. I feel like there would be a little bit of enjoyment actually in the act of writing things out longhand too.
Yeah. Yeah.
What was the last time you saw your own handwriting?
Mm-hmm. What's that?
When was the last time you saw your own handwriting? You know, I actually love the way the pen flows.
Well, I've got my handwriting right here. This is my notes on you guys. My handwriting is shit. So
mine is too. I can't reread half of my things because
yep.
I'm either planning at like 6:30 in the morning with my lava lamp on because it's too bright otherwise. So I'm sitting there squinting, trying to write out three things that I'm excited for. And at the end of the night, well, it's too damn bright again. So I'm reviewing my day by candlelight with wine or tea. So when it comes to Sunday, when I have to review and I'm like, oh, well, I was thankful for my heating pad on Thursday night. Yes. Yes, I was.
Fantastic. Oh, all right, Katie. I don't know how you managed to do this, Katie, but you've gotten us so way far off topic tonight.
Man, I'm sitting here listening to you guys. I'm like, is there a type Z personality? Because I don't fit any of that. I'm like a hot mess every single day, just trying to survive. Well, cheers to keeping three kids alive at the end of the day.
Well, and Katie is unusual that she has a lot of me time every day. I mean, she's got hours and hours that are just, it's just all about her and no responsibilities whatsoever, right?
You did hear the noise level before I kicked the kids out, right? I'm like a PTSD victim every day at the end of the day. I'm like, oh my God, quiet. What is this quiet? I can hear myself think.
Your ears are still ringing a little bit from the chaos. So before we got on air and we briefly mentioned it, there are some changes going on with CreateSpace and I know nothing about them. So do you want to lead the way and talk a little bit about what's happening with CreateSpace and Amazon?
Well, yeah, a while back, Amazon had started offering publishing services for print books. Now, we all know they have the Kindle, the KDP platform. Well, a print option had suddenly appeared, and they didn't have much to offer at that time. They didn't offer author copies that were at wholesale cost. They didn't offer any like cover creation or internal formatting, that kind of thing, which CreateSpace has done. And we all know CreateSpace is an Amazon company. So it kind of led a lot of people to question, are they phasing out CreateSpace and bringing it into just the KDP fold? And recently, CreateSpace is now stopping their author services, the internal formatting, the cover art creation. They're not stopping printing. They're still printing. They're still distributing. But it's a slow phase out, which makes it sound a lot more like they're going to eventually just wipe the slate clean and turn it to Amazon only.
Well, that would be frustrating if I had to redo all this crappy print formatting I had to do and move it over to Amazon, because that was probably my least favorite thing ever to do, was formatting a print book. Oh, my God. And then you wait 2 weeks – for CreateSpace to send it to you, only to find out that you've got something 3 millimeters off and your cover looks like crap, and now you've got to wait another 2 weeks for them to send you the next version. Oh, not cool.
Yeah, and they won't be offering any services like that anymore at CreateSpace. So even if you wanted to opt for them to do it, it's not going to be available. Now, I'm not sure because I haven't looked into what Amazon's offering, but if they've picked up the slack on that end. I know recently Amazon did start offering author copies, so you can now get your copies at wholesale price where they hadn't been before. So they are kind of slowly merging those services over. However, I'm not sure what printer distributor they're using, if it's the same people at CreateSpace is using. I haven't seen any physical copies of an Amazon print book versus a CreateSpace book. I know if you look at CreateSpace versus Ingram or Lightning, they're pretty much on par with each other. So I'm not sure how closely the Kindle product or the Amazon product is to that. But it's definitely looking like we're going to be pushed towards that eventually.
So, Katie, what have you been working on lately?
Still the same old project.
Tell us I'm about the project.
It's been a lot longer of a writing process than usual because I'm in that waiting game. I had decided to go traditional in some respect with this next book series that I'm writing. And I had intended to write it for a traditional marketplace rather than just write it for the readers that I know appreciate my work already. So I changed the style of writing, the approach to the whole, you know, journey for the character. And I enjoyed the first story. I really did. I had a lot of fun writing it. But as I'm querying it, and, you know, when you get the rejections, it really does take a toll on you. And I think seeing all those rejections right now has affected the ability to write the next book.
And you and I talked about this the other night after you somehow convinced me to chat after I'd taken my Ambien. So I don't have a very clear recollection of everything that we talked about. But I do remember touching on this a little, and it's a little bit personal, but this is why we're on this show, is to talk about real things that happen as being an author. And kind of what I gleaned from what I can barely remember of our conversation was that you really liked the story while you're writing the first book, and you were feeling a little disheartened by the rejections that you've gotten, mm-hmm. and that you're having a tough time with the second book because you're not entirely sure that you actually love the series anymore. Is that kind of where you're at, or was I misreading you a little bit?
No, I think that's a pretty accurate response. And really, it's not that I'm not as in love with the series anymore. When I write for just the self-publishing marketplace, I usually interact a lot more with the readers. I ask them questions. I send out beta chapters for people to read, and I get a lot of feedback. And sometimes that feedback really pushes you on. You know, when somebody says, yeah, this is great, you're doing really good with this, I'm loving this character, keep it going. Or even if they say, hey, this isn't working, but I like where you're headed, maybe you should delve deeper into this. That feedback helps push you sometimes towards writing your best. Whereas with this one, because I was aiming more towards the traditional marketplace and I changed the style, I didn't have as much feedback with the readers. And so I'm kind of feeling lost. And recently, I actually did reach out to some of my regular betas, and I said, look, they're not complete chapters. It's not a full picture, but you know my style. You know how I write. Just take a look at this and let me know if this sounds right. That way I can get some of that feedback, and maybe it will help spark that interest again and get me fired up to finish writing the series.
Well, and here's my question for all of you, and we'll go with Anna and Miranda on this, is if you are, and perhaps this has happened to you, perhaps it hasn't, if you are writing something and it started out as a really great idea or something you're excited about, but that excitement starts to fade as the, I don't want to say monotony, but sometimes it can be monotonous, fleshing out an entire story, what do you do? If you're no longer in love with that project that you're writing, do you tough it out? Do you bulldoze through and get the project done, even though you might not love it? Or do you say, hey, you know, let me step back and see if I should be writing this and maybe go a different direction? What do you think? What direction do you think we should go?
I think you should bowl forward and just do it.
I knew you would say that.
You know what? I think, and here's why. Because for us to get to a point of writing chapters, you have to come up with the idea. You have to formulate the kind of the structure of it. You have to start to think about characters. You need to start to build on it. You put all of this time and effort into it, and it's all you. And then when you hear outside noise coming from me, when people give me negative noise about my writing, I take it personally because, hey, it's kind of personal. And I'm like, I don't care if you don't like what I have to write or what I chose to do in my life. Judge me. Who are you to judge me? Right? And who am I to judge you? I don't know. But if you went to all this thought and all this effort to get to where you are, just go, balls out and just do it. Like, you seem like you've put energy into it. You seem like it was a passion at one point. The best thing about writing is when it gets to a tough time, and the harder and the deeper and the darker that you are, that at that lowest of the low, the better your writing will become over the next chapter. Like, not physical chapter, but your next writing phase. Because you are so kind of raw about it right now. It's just you're going to have to dig deeper and you're going to have to work harder. But then it's going to come out way better. And when you're done it, you're going to be like, self high five. I did it. Right. Like, it's just going to be so much better for you at the end of this chapter.
Drop the mic on that.
Love it.
Yeah. That's right. You're awesome, Miranda. What do you think, Anna?
Well, I definitely think you have to persevere. But I do think that there are different ways that people react when you get a no, or you get, I'm not sure where I'm going with it, or is this really what I want? I mean, dig deep into yourself and say, why did I start this? What did I really want to accomplish? What is the end result? What does it really mean to me? Like, what does it mean to me? Because what I don't think people understand is when they give you a rejection and they're like, well, it's not personal, that's bullshit. It's personal, because my whole heart is in what I wrote. This is me. This is part of who I am. This is part of what I believe. This is who I want it to become. And although it's not personal to them, it's personal. So I totally understand where you're coming from, because when I get a no, or, oh my God, I can't believe that, you know, that you thought that was super hot. And I'm like, whatever. It hurts. It hurts really, really bad. I give myself a 5-minute pity party. I even set the timer. I cry till my heart's content till 5 minutes. When the dinger rings, I'm done with my pity party. And I say, okay, what does this really mean to me? What do I want to accomplish? How does this really affect me? And if I don't do it, how will I feel? And if you are don't outweigh the do's, then you have your answer. And if it's do, then dig deep. Because it will come out. It will come out, and you will rise above it. It takes a little bit of time. And I know what you're saying, because, you know, this thing happened with war, when this book was going out and everybody else was saying, no, you got to switch this, or no, you got to switch this. And I was getting a whole bunch of different, publishers telling me what they wanted in order for them to take it. I'm like, I had to really stop and say, hold it. Whose book is this? What does it really mean? And how badly do I want it to work this way? And at the end of the day, I had to come up with, what are my full intentions? What do I want to accomplish by being a writer? Yes, it's writing the book. Yes, it's to give a story that I think will inspire women. But at the end of the day, I also want to turn this into a full-time role for myself, right? And in doing something like that, you need to appeal. So what are the concessions I'm willing to make to get to my end result? And does it actually have something more to do with who I am as a person, or who I am as an author? Am I giving too much up to get there? Those are all personal decisions that you and you only can make, just like I've had to make them. There's no wrong, there's no right. It's just what works best for you. But I can tell you that once you push through and you've made your decision, you will be great because it's your decision.
Now, Jason, do you have anything to add to that as well? Because you were, even though you were in the ambient haze, you were very, very helpful with your advice.
Well, honestly, I don't remember what I told you the other night, but I will tell you what I do, because I will get really excited about a project and then I'll start writing it. And if I'm not feeling it, I'll try to push through, but a lot of times I will set that project down and pick up another one for a little while and then go back to it and kind of bounce back and forth between different projects. But for me, if I don't love what I'm writing, it's really difficult for me to write it. You know, I might have seen something out in the wild there that I thought was a really neat idea for a story, and then begin writing it and all of a sudden discover that, you know what, there's not really a story here. You know, this was just a cool experience that I saw, or maybe this would make a great short story or a poem, something like that. But, you know, I have a really tough time doing things that I'm not passionate about. Mm-hmm. And that's probably what you and I talked about the other night, Katie, is it's just, if the fire isn't there, I have a tough time doing it. And I know that you have written in many genres and you've written many books. What's your total count up to now, Katie?
I'm above 20, I think.
Yeah. So over 20 books. You are a prolific writer. You produce a lot of fiction every year. And so I feel like you, being the person that I know you are, you're driven and disciplined enough that if you needed to put down a project because you're not feeling it, that you could easily pick up another project and then still go back to that one. I feel like you have the discipline that it takes to do something like that. Because if you're not feeling it, I don't know how you're going to, I feel like every story has got to have your whole heart in it. And if you're not willing to invest your whole heart into something because your heart's not in it, then how the hell are the readers going to feel about it? You know,
that's absolutely true. You do have to put everything you have into a story if you want the readers to feel it.
And that doesn't
mean what it is.
Yeah. And that doesn't mean you don't push, that you don't work hard, because, you know, I have stories that I absolutely love, but that they were hard ass work to do it. You know, it takes me a year to write a book and my books aren't even that long. It's just, it's a lot of hard work and it's a lot of time that you're dedicating to it. And I don't know, if you can't do it with your whole heart, I feel like maybe you should take a broader look at what you're doing and see if maybe there's a different direction you want to go. And little pieces are coming back to me now. The brain is starting to work. You are at a point in this because you want to go traditional with this work, that you could go right back to the beginning and you can gut the whole project. Keep your characters, because I love your characters. I thought they were great. I especially love the gamer angle. That you could go back to the start and really do a lot of rewriting if it's not the direction you want to go. And that's not going to hurt you at this point. All you're losing is time. And the speed with which you write, you can make up that time. You know, you can make up that time in just a couple months because you pound those words out. This woman is a freaking machine when it comes to writing. It's incredible. How many books do you produce every year, Katie?
On average, between 3 and 4.
Yeah, that seems like a lot to me.
But, you know, and it's, you're kind of touching on it too, though. When you're really passionate about what you're writing, mm-hmm. it flows. And yeah, I think we can all agree on that. When you are just fired up and you've got the characters and they're speaking and you've got the plot all figured out, whether you're a plotter or a pantser, you can just sit down and the words come. You know, like you wake up at 2 a.m. and you've got that idea and you put it down and you're ready to write the second you hit that computer. It's wonderful when you're in that zone, but when you're outside of that zone, yeah, it's really hard to push through and to make it happen.
You're like Atreyu caught in the swamps of despair and you're trying to slog through and you just can't get out of that shit because it's sticky.
But
somebody dumped tar in it.
Poor Artax.
Artax. But no, I actually had to put down my favorite books that I've written are Pathosis and the book formerly known as Deranged, which is now Ecocide. And they were my favorite because I like nerdy science books that have a thriller aspect, like Michael Crichton and James Rowland, that kind of books. That's my shit. That's what I love. Only nobody wanted to review the books. Nobody seemed to want to buy the books. So I wrote two books in a series, and I got a couple chapters into the third, and I'm sitting there watching all my Amazon numbers, which is a depressing thing if they're not selling. And I'm like, what am I doing? You know, I love this project, but if no one's reading it, why am I doing it? You know, I want to do it for me. I really do. But at the same time, I feel like I have a responsibility not only to myself, but to my wife and to my kids and to readers that, you know, okay, you know, if I'm treating this as a business and I'm doing it with the intent to sell books and to distribute books, then I've got to do something that sells. And that's a frustrating thing because I don't necessarily just want to do things that sell. You know, I want to have those passion projects, as you mentioned, Miranda. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a tough thing for all of us to be able to ride that line between what's passion and what's work and kind of make them work together.
Very much so. Very much so. How do you create a passion into a complete lifestyle? The ultimate goal.
You could do a whole speaking series on that, Miranda, and I would watch that shit. Because you'd be like, boom!
Sure, I could.
There we go, the next YouTube series. That's how a lot of people are making their money. They're doing YouTube. They're, you know, talking about what they're passionate about, or they're vlogging, and it's working for a lot of people too.
It is. It is huge. Like my social media platforms are constantly going. It's so, like, and people are like, oh my God, I love your posts. And I'm like, great. I create them all on Sundays, and then a timer goes off on my phone, and then I copy it and I paste it, and then I post it. But how am I supposed to do, like, to completely appease and to grow, right? Like, we may produce multiple books. I produced two books in 1 year, and I needed to take 2 years off because I have to now promote my books in order to supplement and create the third one financially, right? So it's definitely, I have to organize a specific time and do my business. And literally Sunday is a work day to just prep, post, and talk to people, reach out randomly at a bunch of people. I'm like, oh, you look fun. Here, let's be friends. And then we become friends. It's an amazing world we live in.
I love her optimism. That's fantastic. I wish I had like 25% of that all the time. I would be so good. That'd be great.
It's all a choice. You have it in you. You have the power, darling. You have the power.
Isn't that the whole thing behind The Secret, is believing in yourself or telling yourself that you can do it?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I think I fell asleep during that movie and I didn't read the book. So
I didn't either, but I read a spoiler post.
I thought it was all about making boards with pictures on them. Dream board or whatever it is.
Vision board.
Oh, yeah. Vision board. I want to do that.
Isn't
that's a lot of wine. That's a lot of wine. And you want somebody with sparkles. Like, you want somebody with glitter glue. Glitter glue and a bedazzler something. Oh, yeah. That's who you want a vision board with. How's your vision board?
Well, Katie, we are... We're starting to run long here, Katie. Is there anything else we're supposed to be talking about?
No, I don't think so. Let's take a shot at that, though. I want to hear her balance. How does she balance?
How do I balance? I am a very organized person, and you have to have priorities, right? So at this point in my life, and I'm older than all of you.
I'm pretty old.
I should have more time. But somehow or other, I don't. I'm really good at putting what I need first. And, you know, I have a full-time job, so that's my, you know, 9 to 5. And then after that, it becomes kids, grandkids, that type of thing, when I can help. but I definitely make sure that there is a day in there where I am just focusing on the things that I need and I want to accomplish. That being said, I also think a big part of why I do well or why I continue to write in a healthy way is because I also, I'm very physical. So I, you know, I work out every day. I make sure that I take care of my body as well as my mind. And I also know when to stop. There are some times that we push and we push and we push ourselves to the point where we're almost exhausting our minds. And I get to a point when I know when it's there, when it starts to waver and I can, and I feel it, it's like, no, I have to stop now before I write garbage. Cause now I'm going to, I can spend the next hour writing and it will be useless to me. So a lot of it is being able to maintain that balance in what I do. And I think it's also knowing who you are. And again, I've kind of got there because again, I'm older than all of you. So at this point, I know what I want. I know what I don't want. I know very, very, very well how much time I've given myself to get to a certain point in my life. I'm very driven to the point that I think I drive my husband nuts. But I am the go for gusto person. And then, you know, he's the calm, pull you back, rein you in. Have you thought this through? And sometimes I'll listen and sometimes I'm like, no, hold on to the balloon with me because we're both lying. And that's what's going to happen. And I'm really lucky that my husband is so good at letting me fly and then holding me down enough that I'm not going to be too far off the floor if I do fall. So I'm very fortunate that way, but I think it's taken years for me to accomplish the fact that I know who I am and I know what I want and I'm going to get it.
I think you guys both gave some excellent advice. I think that the biggest takeaways from this episode tonight are have priorities, know what your priorities are, write them down because that physical active writing does help. And make sure that you give yourself some me time too. I think that third one's the hardest one for all of us. For Jason, sure. How about you? What were your takeaways on this?
I feel like this was a really optimistic, inspirational talk. And I don't mean that in a hokey way or in a mocking way. I'm being completely genuine. I think that you two are both awesome. Katie, you know, I think you're awesome. But our two guests are both awesome tonight. And I think that all of us as authors out there or designers or professionals in whatever the hell field we're in need that. We need to spend more time with our chins up and our tits out and thinking, hey, I can do this. I know what I want and I'm going to do it and I'm going to believe in myself. And I know I've struggled with that and I know probably millions of other people do, but I agree. I love it.
I'll interject right there. Even if you don't know what you want, if you have the slightest clue about what you think what you want, you have one life. Go after it. You could get hit by a bus tomorrow. Like reality, like don't go do something stupid, but
like walk in front of a bus
like that, you know, look both ways twice before you cross every street. My dad would be so happy. But yeah, just go for it, right? Just go for it. I really enjoyed our chit chat this evening, guys. It was really, really entertaining.
Good. Well, we've enjoyed having you both on. Well, we're going to wrap up for tonight. I am certain that we'll be chatting with you guys on social media and maybe sometime in the future we can have you guys on again. Thank you so much to Miranda and Anna for coming on and hanging out with us tonight. You guys you're fabulous.
Perfect.
Yeah,
thank you so much.
Oh, yep. What was that, Anna? I'm sorry.
I said, thank you for having me. I really, really enjoyed my time.
Good.
I love doing this every week. It's one of my favorite things because we not only get to meet really awesome people, but everyone that we bring onto the show gives us something extra, you know, that their perspective, their story, their inspiration. And it's wonderful to actually hear it and to share it with our viewers as well. So thank you both for coming in tonight and for talking to us and sharing your empowering stories.
Thank you for your time and your questions.
Everyone, make sure to subscribe for future updates of when we have our next shows available. We should be back next week with more authors to introduce you to and the ever awesome Reverend Jason Lavelle.
Yeah. What?
Yeah. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Spilling Ink.